With the state of today's economy, it is more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made of the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back into your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Just in case you thought that all representatives of Seven Investment Management wear red braces and have double-barreled names, we have Ben Kumar, who's an investment manager at the company.
Good morning.
Good morning. I just managed to get that out. Actually, just to go back to that, Seven Investment Management has been one of the successes of the last decade. And from what I remember, I interviewed Justin Urquhart-Stewart a while back. You do have a sort of particular philosophy in terms of being different to the rest of the herd in the area.
Yeah, I mean, the phrase we use is radical common sense, which is just, you know, try and take a step back from what everyone else is, when everyone else is panicking, and see actually, in, over the longer term, what the sensible moves investment-wise are. Now, whether that's for your clients who might want to take a longer view because they have further to go in terms of their time horizon, or whether it's because we're looking at markets and saying, well, actually, that's a little bit distorted and there's panic there, or perhaps, well, actually, everyone's a little bit confident there and we need to trim. That's the kind of philosophy we've taken, and as you say, it's done quite well over the last 10, 15 years.
Right, and is it sort of like a selective contrarianism? Is that the way you look at it? You know, like the ruble has collapsed, but let's wait and see. But we probably think Russia's cheap, or the yen is gone too far this way or that way. Is it down to that you're looking at potential mispricing, but then stepping back and then adding in your own insight?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a fair description. Selective contrarianism, because it doesn't always pay to be contrarian.
You can be part of that.
You can be, yeah. I think it's a good little phrase. You can be wrong for a considerable time being a contrarian, and you have to understand that sometimes things don't reverse. So the ruble being a great example. We've been watching that for a while since it spiked up to about 100 versus the pound. On the back of the oil drop, that looked like an opportunity that we want to explore at some point. Equally, you've got a lot of other ideas on the table, things like the dollar, when everyone said that it was going on a bull run and it was going to parity versus the euro and maybe beyond. That suggested to us that with weak US data, perhaps you wanted to take a little bit of
over-exuberance.
Yeah, and things like that are when you see headlines time after time, particularly on things like the BBC Business site, if that's saying dollar on a bull run unmatched, probably want to be aware that there might be a few people out in the market looking at the fundamentals rather than just the top line of the page. So that's an opportunity. Having said that, you have to be aware that there are driving forces in markets when it comes to momentum. The rally we've seen in European shares due to QE coming on and growth coming in, that's not a contrarian position. That was something that was quite well forecast, and I think we've benefited from that too.
Right. Well, I'm trying to get all your state secrets. But I mean, how do you whittle down the general macro picture into the right asset in the right asset class?
Well, I mean, we're very fortunate in that we have strategic asset allocations, which give you an optimized version of what an ideal portfolio would have done over the last 70 years, and gives you 10% in UK equity, 10% in US equity, 10% in European, all the way down through about 30 asset classes. That's the structure you can work from, and then convey your macro view of the world and say, well, actually, we don't like US very much. So in a balanced portfolio, we should have 10%. Let's have 5% or 0% as we are at the moment. When you've got a structure like that, it's actually quite easy to almost have blue sky thinking on the macro. And then when it comes to implementation, you have this solid skeleton framework to come and work from and say, okay, right, so we think we really like Russian assets. Now, do we have space for that for a moderately cautious client? Well, maybe we don't. Maybe they have a certain allocation to emerging market bonds and we think it's too risky. When you look at it like that, and with the help of a risk monitoring team, I think it's easier to have confidence in being contrarian and have confidence that you're implementing it in as best a way as possible.
But then you know, the oil price collapsed, and I think, oh well, actually, I want to buy some oil stocks. So I've got a choice between BG Group, Tullow, and Afrin. And I choose Afrin.
Yeah, well, we're very fortunate in...
Because that was the cheapest and yeah, blah, blah, blah.
And remains the cheapest.
You know, it'll be the riskiest one as well, just by its size and where Afrin's interests are.
Whereas, you know, BG sort of think, oh, well, there's not much growth, you know, and it gets taken over. So I mean, obviously, that's why people go to a fund manager rather than, or an investment manager rather than do it themselves. But it's interesting to know how you filter these to the right...
Well, you have to bear in mind that because we're fund of funds, we tend to, you know, express a view through index trackers or through a selection of active managers. Now, you might find an active manager who has characteristics you like a being a value manager or a growth manager. But in terms of the individual stock selection, that's actually not something we concern ourselves with, because I think when you take a broad macro view...
So other people do the heavy lifting on that.
Well, exactly. You know, I think that we're pretty decent at picking the macro right and choosing which market to be in, which is, you know, probably 80% of your decision. And I'm quite happy to delegate to an expert in the UK large cap field, European equity field, you know, let them choose between BG and Afrin and hopefully get it right. But when it, you know, I think stock selection in a market is kind of the icing on the cake. You know, the difference between choosing to be in China last year and choosing to be in the UK, you know, that's where your main source of return comes from. China up 70%, UK up about 5%. Now, you can pick the best manager in the UK that there was last year, and he might have done you 10%. You can pick a pretty average manager in China, and he'll have done you 60%. You know, your asset allocation decisions are, I think, really where the weight needs to be.
All right, just quickly, so what are you looking at? What are your sort of favourite areas at the moment, or things to people should put on their sort of watch list?
Well, I mean, I think the Chinese situation is incredibly interesting. You know, both bonds and equities in China are incredibly underinvested by the global community. The Chinese renminbi bond market is $6 trillion worth. The Chinese equity markets are similar, and foreign investors haven't been able to be there. That's okay. Now we've got internationalization in China. Things are looking pretty good. And I think you are going to start to see flows go in, particularly as passive funds start to take a bit of the weight. China will increase in index size, and all of those Vanguard funds, those BlackRock funds, those iShares funds, money's going to pour in almost by default.
And is there a risk, though, that, you know, that might, you know, China might just drain the cash out of the rest of the world? That people would say, well, actually, let's just go into China. That's the emerging market, or that's the place to be, and just like forget the US and forget Europe.
Well, I think that might well be a risk, to be honest with you. There are still quite a lot of, you know, geographically specific managers out there. But I think, you know, when you've seen China go on a run like it has, people are nervous of investing. But I think internationalization is, when China becomes a true global player, then the money should flow out of the US, you know. It will no longer be 50% of the global equity market. It will be 40%. It should have 10% less, 10% on a global basis, less assets, which means, I guess, it loses 20% of its market cap. That could be painful, and I suspect you'll see some ramifications throughout the world. I guess we have to see how China reacts to that and how the US reacts to China.
Okay, on that intriguing note, Ben Kumar, investment manager at Seven Oak Investment Management, thanks very much for speaking with us today. We'll be back after the break with Clive Lambert.